Well, the space shuttle is out there. It's the last mission. It's hard to imagine over 100 missions out there, the loss of two shuttles during the program. What technology will be next? Where does NASA go from here? Michael Belfiore is with us. He's an author, journalist, and speaker on the innovation shaping our world. Michael, thank you so much for being a part of the show today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Where does the space program go after the shuttle? Because that was such cutting-edge technology back when it was first introduced.
Sure, 30 years ago it was. But now we're ready for something different. And what that different thing is privatized space access to low Earth orbit to take over the shuttle mission.
What about the, I always have heard this, and you're going to laugh because you're going to think I'm a conspiracy crazy person. I've always heard this word, the Aurora. Are you familiar with that?
Was that a spy satellite back in the day?
You know what it is? It's this Area 51 thing that people swear that they've seen and that a senator had mentioned before. It was this 5,000 mile per hour thing that can get you up into space and come back down just like an airplane.
Yeah, you're probably talking about scramjets.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that's in development. Hypersonic air breathing aircraft that can go as fast as rockets. That's in development. That's pretty far out, though. It's going to be another, maybe a couple decades before we see that coming in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to ask you about because, we see all these science fiction movies and TV shows with space shuttles or space rockets going out into outer space and exploring planets and setting down and so forth. But as my colleague Ernie was just explaining to me, sort of to my disappointment, the shuttle has just been circling planet Earth all this time. When are we going to get out there?
It was never ambitious to begin with. It was meant to be something that made space routine, at least to low Earth orbit, and never beyond low Earth orbit. So we went all the way to the moon, and we came back home, and no one had anything that could leave the planet again. And what's going to be really exciting, I think, is now that the shuttle is retiring, NASA is now turning over that routine access to low Earth orbit to private companies who can do this for much less money, much more efficiently, and much safer. And now that money that was being wrapped up in the shuttle, $1.5 billion per launch, is now going to be going back into research and development, which is what NASA used to do, to develop new technologies, to finally start exploring beyond Earth again.
Yeah, I think that's what people are really geared up for and excited about. But explain to me, why would private companies want to be engaged in orbiting planet Earth? What does this promise hold?
It's another business that can be profitable.
So just tourism?
Tourism is one market, and the government is another market. Other countries, other governments, the military. But actually, when you dig a little deeper, the people running these companies actually dreaming pretty big. They have really bold ideas. They want to leave low Earth orbit too, but they see a sustainable step-by-step approach that's funded by different customers like the government wanting to go to space station as a way to keep their business profitable, keep revenue flowing, and fund their next step. So space exploration technologies is what's going to be delivering supplies to the space station this year, actually. Has a very ambitious plan, actually get all the way to Mars eventually.
When we get to Mars, what are we going to find? Why do we want to go there?
Well, if you talk to Elon Musk, who I spent a lot of time with writing my book, Rocketeers, who runs SpaceX, he's pretty upfront about his reasoning. It sounds pretty out there, too, but he's got a point that, we're here on planet Earth, we're fairly vulnerable. It's theorized that 65 million years ago, an asteroid wiped out the dinosaurs, along with, a huge percentage of life on Earth. So if that sort of event were to happen again, there wouldn't be much hope for us. But if we can establish a colony on Mars, then there's eggs in another basket.
Oh, I see. So this is sort of like Noah's Ark to get to Mars.
Sure, yeah. And, and beyond that, though, there's something inspiring about the frontier. It's been part of the American psyche since the beginning. And to have that frontier again, that possibly could be settled. There's riches out there. Everything that we fight wars over here on Earth is out there in abundance. There's energy. There's precious minerals. Space itself.
The environmentalists, though, wouldn't let us do that.
The environmentalists, actually, the environmentalists are all over this, too. And some astronauts I talk to say you can't actually go into space and not come back an environmentalist because you see the whole Earth and how fragile it is and hey, you know, we ought to take care of what we have down here, but also maybe let's get an insurance policy out in space as well.
You know, you look at Mars, though. You take the least hospitable climate on Earth, it's still more hospitable than what you'd find on Mars. I mean, the top layer of Mars is toast because of radiation. I mean, what are we going to do when we get there? I don't even see it as a lifeboat, really.
It's true. Well, you know, there's plans to terraform Mars. It's really far out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think just having just something to be inspired about, though, there's huge benefit in that. And having a high-tech industry that is going to serve Earth right now is very beneficial, too. There's a lot we can do in orbit still, and there's a lot of people who want to go up there, and corporations as well, if it would just be affordable enough.
So Ernie says, what are we going to find on Mars? What about fire monsters? And what I mean by that is,
do you
believe that we might find life forms on other planets and in outer space if we go out there and look?
Maybe
not green women like in Star Trek, but something?
Well, Mars needs women.
Mars needs everybody, according to Elon Musk.
Yeah.
You know, I think there is life out there. I don't know if we'll encounter it or not in our lifetimes, but I think it's out there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Michael, when I was a kid, I grew up in Houston around the space program, and it always meant a lot to me. One of the big disappointments is when I finally started to really understand the distances that we really are out in the boonies. In space terms, and if somebody does visit us, they obviously have to be much further advanced technologically than we are, and then it's a crapshoot as to whether they're nice or not.
Yeah, my dad would tell me that we should just surrender immediately.
Well, you know, we're talking about motivations for starting these companies. One of the folks who's running one of these companies, Bigelow Aerospace, a guy named Robert Bigelow, is a Las Vegas real estate developer. And here's a family story in his history that his grandparents supposedly encountered a UFO, you know, and he didn't see one himself. But this was a story that was told to him since he was very young, and he found it just sort of became ingrained in his consciousness, and he decided that he just had to find some way to help humanity get out there, and if there's something out there to meet them, at least halfway. And now he's got the first commercial space station under development, and he's going to be ready to launch in 3 or 4 years.
It's fascinating, the idea. I guess we all think about it seems so much of our understanding of space, and it's not real understanding, but fascination comes from science fiction movies. But it seems like a lot of the science fiction we dreamed of has become reality.
It's becoming reality. That's what I find so exciting about all this. I was a science fiction fan. I, you know, grew up reading Robert Heinlein and Isaac Asimov and those guys. And
there's a lot of sex in those books, actually.
And you know,
I read a Robert Heinlein too.
Yeah, he kind of got a little nutty toward the end, I think. but those old-time science fiction books, they postulated a future in which space is just like any other place to do business. It's just like a railroad or an airline. And what happened was when the space race happened with Sputnik and Apollo and all that, that all came, just kind of went away because everyone thought, oh, no, only a big government can do this stuff. And that took a lot of the fun out of it, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you couldn't be a garage tinkerer doing this stuff, supposedly. But that was proven wrong in 2004. The first home-built spacecraft actually took off. And now the cat's out of the bag. Now, you know, we can do what the old-time science fiction writers thought about. We can build our own spaceships and get out there.
This is Michael Belfiore, author, journalist, and speaker on the innovation shaping our world. We sure appreciate you coming on, Michael. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, we'll do it again.